I'm joined by Nico Rosberg, who's in Germany at the moment. Hello, Nico, how are you?
Hi, I'm very, very good. Actually, I'm not in Germany. I'm in Ibiza in our house here, which is really a privileged situation to be in.
Lovely. Now, you're famous as a racing driver champion, but you've also, as well as your passion for racing fast cars, you have a passion for sustainable investment, sustainable entrepreneurship. Can you tell us one or two of the things you've been doing on that since your racing career finished?
My lighthouse project actually at the moment has been founding the Green Tech Festival in Berlin. And in its first year, last year, we had 40,000 participants come. It's really a platform where all the leading figures in green technology businesses and also the green technologies, the greatest innovations themselves are come together. It's like it's a hub. And it was huge. I mean, we had a conference. We had great speakers there, Paul Polman. We had Prince Hakon. So we had really, it was a fantastic kickoff year. And the purpose really is to have impact, of course, yeah, to create solutions, to create networking opportunities, to have impact. And so it's a little bit like the WEF in smaller and more focused on green technologies. And that I'm very, very proud of.
Yeah, so tell us something about how the pandemic is affecting that. I mean, in the short term, the event this year, I guess, is kind of on hold, right? Are you going to do it virtually? Are you going to postpone it until lockdown has been eased? What will happen?
As you know from the WEF, being in the event business is not the best place to be in during COVID. So we've had our fair share of challenges as well. However, we've had so much support from all of our major partners, and I'm very, very thankful for that. And now we're full speed ahead for an event in autumn, and we're going hybrid. So we're going to have the usual conference, the usual Green Awards, with, of course, less people, but we're accelerating our virtual component and our virtual dimension. And that's going to be, spectacular. I really look forward to it. There's going to be webinars, masterclasses, keynotes, and it was always our plan. So again, COVID was an opportunity for us to accelerate this virtual component. And I think in the virtual world also, that's where the real power is, to reach even more people and to have impact in preserving the environment. You have to reach as many people as possible, and particularly also the people in the developing countries, because that's where the biggest impact could be had.
And then in the longer term, how will the pandemic affect the work of that? Some people are seeing we're talking about the great reset, the great rebuild. How can we come out of this and not only rebuild an economy that provides livelihoods and generates wealth, but also that does it better and more sustainably in terms of climate change or pollution, this kind of thing? Do you see that as an important element of what's going to happen in the next 12, 24 months and onwards?
So COVID, of course, is terrible for our society. We all know that, and so many people suffering. So I'm well aware of that. But at the same time, of course, in every crisis, there's also opportunities. And I think COVID has really reminded us about the fragility of our society, and in turn, maybe even has reminded us about the fragility of our planet as well. And so for me, I really believe that this is an opportunity which we're all going to take to not only improve our resilience to such viruses and pandemics in the future, but to also focus even more on preserving our environment. And we can see this now already happening. I mean, we've seen the Green Deal and the recovery fund that's associated to that. 1/4 of the recovery fund is going straight into green initiatives. And there's a clause in the entire recovery fund, which means that no money can go to a project or business or whatever that is clearly detrimental to the environment in the medium term. And I think that's incredible parameters that we're seeing added to this funding that is there to actually help the COVID situation. And I think we have some really leading examples as well. And I would like to take France and Air France, where the government has come in to save Air France, but they've made it clear that there's like really green conditions to their saving of the business. They must invest in the newest technology in the next coming years, and even they must give up some of their short travel distances to the railway, which is much more emission free, of course. So there's really I think some fantastic initiatives there that are being put forth.
The fund you're talking about there, that's the European Union.
Yes.
One, right, okay. So you come across lots of innovations, sustainable ideas for business. I know mobility and transport are very close to your heart. Are there any particular innovative ideas that you've seen that have surprised you and you thought, actually, they've really got something here. This could really change the world or change the way we do things.
I would like to start with a negative, actually, with some of the biggest problems we're facing in this disruption in mobility. And it's a positive disruption in the long term, of course, because we're going into a much more sustainable form of mobility. But let me take Germany as an example. The other day, I rented a Tesla in Berlin, and I drove from Berlin to Leipzig to the global gathering of the transport ministers, where I had the honor of having a keynote speech. And when I got there, I was almost out of energy, which is a problem as such still from electric cars, as we know, the range. And then I got there and I said, okay, let me look for a supercharger. So I put on the map, there was not a single supercharger in the entire area within Leipzig or around Leipzig. And then in my keynote, I criticized this. And there happened to be the Leipzig mayor in the audience. He jumped up, was quite furious at me, and he said, Mr. Rosberg, we've got 140 superchargers in the city. And so what turned out to be the case was that these superchargers, yes, they were there, but none of them were compatible for a Tesla. And so you can just see this individuals trying to make it happen, this dysfunctional approach, and it will never work like that. The only way for this disruption in mobility to happen and to happen fast in the way it has to is for us to do it together, to join forces. Companies must join forces, the governments must join forces, and particularly on a global scale, all of that is very important. So that's the negative example. And then a positive innovation that I've seen, as you know, I'm very, very active in the mobility startup world, having more than 20 investments by now. And one of the ones I'm most proud of is Lilium, which is one of the two or three leading VITL startup companies in the world. And what they're doing, so they've developed a jet that has many, many small electric turbines, driven by battery power, of course, takes off vertically and then can turn into a plane. So it can go up to 300 kilometers an hour. Huge benefits, because it can cover the short distance without any negatives, and it can cover the long range as well. And this, especially once it goes autonomous, it's really going to democratize these kind of flying taxis, and it's going to open up so much positive opportunities. It's going to decongest the cities. It's going to allow people to commute from outside of cities in a very, very enjoyable way, very quickly as well, and very cheaply. And so that's a fantastic innovation that I'm so looking forward to. Unfortunately, it's still going to take a couple of years.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, that's the kind of thing people have been talking about for decades, and it's always seemed a bit science fiction-y, and it still does in a way. Any idea when a city will be able to have that? I mean, when will I be able to get into my air taxi, do you think?
Volocopter, which is another investment actually of mine, is another VITL in Germany, and they are leading the way in terms of timeline, and they're actually looking for 2021 or 2022 at the latest to start doing their first commercial flights. And cities like Singapore are most advanced there, possibly also Dubai. So it's around the corner now. It's very, very close. Of course, in the beginning, they won't be autonomous. They'll still be the pilot inside. And for the business model, the autonomy is quite important. For the economy, economics, but also for the safety in the end. Autonomy is going to be fantastic. So I'm looking forward to that so much, and I hope to be able to do one of the first flights as well.
Okay. So let's go back to the negatives then. When it comes to transport and mobility, what is the biggest challenge to making it sustainable? Is it the fuel? Is it the vehicles themselves? Or is it the way the transport system's organized? What is the main challenge that we have to solve?
Well, apart from the infrastructure that I said, let's talk about fuel. Fuel is a big, big issue. And I think the solution there has to be synthetic fuel or biofuels. We know that. And it's being looked at. But somehow the air transport industry is, I don't know, it's a bit slow. I wish they were a bit faster in that. And I believe that it's, in the end, it's down to the government to set tighter restrictions there and tighter targets for the air travel industry to reach. Just as Air France has now been set by the government, that global governments also go that path. I think that's going to be quite crucial. And possibly, I was at the WEF in January, and there was the first initial talks about between the WEF and Formula One, where the WEF was saying, hey, F1, you're looking at synthetic fuels in 5 years' time, why not try and pull that earlier, and we try and support you. So the WEF supports Formula One to try and make F1 sort of the synthetic fuel development grounds. And I think that would be so awesome and such a great opportunity for F1 to maybe have an incredible impact on the whole transport industry and on preserving the environment if the synthetic fuels really manage to successfully get delivered and produced in or research and development done in Formula One.
So do you see the future in terms of transport fuel as biofuels and synthetic fuels rather than electricity and potentially hydrogen?
Well, there's different forms of transport that will have different opportunities. Air transport, for the foreseeable future, for the next decades, it's unlikely to be able to do anything apart from fuels, just because of the energy density that we have there. So that's unfortunately a big problem, and therefore synthetic fuels is the biggest opportunity there. Then if you look at long distance transport, of course there you would look at the hydrogen approach. But of course in hydrogen, the actual production of hydrogen is so environmentally polluting. So that's the biggest problem there. So you need to make sure that it's produced using renewable energies at source, and that the transportation method then also is powered by renewable energies. So that's a big challenge there still. But there's first project popping up now, left, right, and center. So that's going to be good for the long distance travel. And then of course the shorter distance travel is all going to be battery technology in the short term, and that's in cars, buses for the short distance. And then of course you go all the way down to e-scooters, which I think as well has been a great innovation, this whole e-scooter movement.
So you mentioned that Formula One is being encouraged to develop, and it already is, synthetic fuels, but it's also, there's electric Formula One, right? So will these two things run side by side? I had the impression, as someone I'm not a big fan of motor racing, don't follow it closely, but I was vaguely aware that I was under the impression that maybe electric race cars were the way to go. Is there some reason that won't happen?
So the electric Formula One is called Formula E, and actually I'm a shareholder of the championship since the early days as well, very proudly so, because it's been a big success so far. And I don't see them in competition. Formula One remains the pinnacle of motorsport. It's the gladiators fighting it out. It's absolute thrilling excitement, entertainment, high-tech technology, and that's going to remain the case. And then you have Formula E, which is a different approach. It's the future of mobility. It's electric. It's the developing platform for all the car manufacturers to develop their electric motors, which that in as such is very special, because the race to road transfer of technology is really second to none in Formula E. Literally the electric motors that the manufacturers are developing for their Formula E race cars will end up in our electric cars 2-3 years down the road. That's very, very special. And then Formula E also is, of course, it's showcasing the vision of the future. It's bringing electric cars and electric racing to the city centers, making it very approachable for families to see. It has no noise. So you see families with their babies coming there to the racetrack. So it's very different positioning. And I think both have their place and for a long, long time.
Can we talk a bit about public attitudes and how they may have changed, particularly with the pandemic? Because you mentioned that, for example, for air transport, it's going to take government regulation to push companies to make the necessary changes. For governments and politicians to make those decisions, it means the voters have to be pushing the politicians to do it. Do you think the lockdown with cleaner air, emptier streets, has nudged parts of public opinion, or do you think we were already, I guess maybe in Europe, I don't know if you can speak about other parts of the world, we're already taking very seriously the ideas of climate change, pollution, congestion?
That's a very, very good point. So it's so important for us to manage to also shift the consumer mindset. And this applies to so many industries, but particularly also the mobility industry. And there's been a recent survey in Germany, which really shows how so many people wish to keep the situation on their streets the way it was during COVID. So more quiet, less congested, less polluting. It was a very, very clear trend, and much more clear than before coronavirus. And so again, there, I think for the consumer mindset, Corona has been an opportunity, and it's an opportunity for them, because the problem is it's really a chicken and egg situation. The consumers have to embrace the electric mobility in order to increase the demand, in order to increase the supply, in order to drive the price down, because at the moment the price is still too high, the price point is too high, and that's a huge hurdle for consumers, because where the electric mobility is really going to take off is if the price point is at least the same or less than a combustion engine. And we're getting there, but we also need that shift in the consumer mindset. That's very, very important. And maybe the governments can do a little bit more there also in that sense, and create some more marketing, raising awareness campaigns. And finally, we need subsidies. I mean, there has to be subsidies for e-mobility. And it's a challenge for the government, because we've just seen in Germany that yes, they did some subsidies for e-mobility, but they did the same subsidies for combustion engines. And so it's a difficult one, because you always have to weigh up the economy versus going greener. You know, it's a tough one.
Mm. You talked about the innovation at Formula One. From the outside, Formula One doesn't seem the greenest sport in the world. You know, it's petrol heads, it's loud engines. Do you think that's just a public misconception, that actually Formula One, because of all the innovation it's doing, can be seen as quite a center of sustainable investment? Or do you think Formula One itself, that whole industry, has shifted fairly rapidly in that direction in recent years?
So that conception is not fair. Formula One is very, very conscious of sustainability. And let's go into the engine itself. The Formula One engine, the hybrid that they have with a tiny turbo engine, quite possibly is the most sustainable engine that we have at the moment in the world of mobility. And particularly, it's more sustainable than electric cars. And that's an interesting one. So the Formula One engine is more sustainable than electric cars if you look at a case like Germany. And the reason is because in Germany, you have more than 50% of the electric cars being powered by coal energy. And that means that only after 100,000 kilometers is the electric car in Germany actually more sustainable than a combustion engine. But that's a normal combustion engine and not the high efficiency Formula One combustion engine hybrid. And so people don't really know this. And I think it's fair to say these things. And therefore also Formula One has now stated that they're going emission free as a sport by 2030, which, considering the whole logistical background to the sport, that's going to be a huge challenge, because most of the emissions come from the logistics. So also there, it's going to be down to synthetic fuels as an opportunity, certainly, to reduce the emissions from the whole logistical traveling and everything.
Okay. So as we ease lockdown, as we start to rebuild the global economy, what are the first big changes you'd like to see in the way transport mobility are run? Are there several steps? You've mentioned an electric car that it costs the same as the normal car now. Are there other things that you'd say, right, that's a real milestone, we're making progress now? What should we expect and hope for?
I think it's really important to also build out the whole public transport system, because that's a system that it's the easiest to make that emission free in the short term. And so I think that's a big opportunity. And again, we're seeing that in Germany, where that's the plan. Huh? I mean, the government is now supporting the railway system with 7 billion euros. And after that, there's going to be even more required to extend the whole infrastructure. And that's going to be, I think that's going to be crucial, because we need to start reducing our air travel. And again, also there, I believe we're all becoming more conscious of that. I don't feel like I want to reduce those flights now, you know, even more than before. So this again has come via COVID, and I will be using the German train system even more. So I think that's one important thing. And then all these individual e-mobility services. So you have like the e-scooters. That's perfect example, which I think in cities is gonna grow more and more, and it's a great opportunity. Even with the pandemic now, you know, you might prefer to travel on your own, so e-scooters are gonna get a huge boost.
You've just given me my headline, you know, a Formula One driver, big fan of scooters. It's a lovely idea. So can we just talk about how it's been to you personally in lockdown? I've seen videos of you playing esports. So you're driving a car. I actually, we did a podcast recently about esports, and how, because there's not real sport going on, a lot of people are turning increasingly to esports. And I just wonder how similar it is to drive a virtual racing car to drive an actual Formula One car, which is very high tech itself. What are the similarities? What are the differences? And is it any fun for someone like you?
Yeah, I did many interesting things during lockdown. One of the things was to take part in an esports race for Formula One. But that was just a bit of fun. And it's very, very challenging. It's a whole different world. And you see that these gamers, I mean, their level of performance is off the charts. I was practicing quite a lot, and I was still like 1.5 seconds off per lap from the gamers. So huge respect. And it's their fault that I've now stopped driving the simulator, because I just see it as hopeless to become the best. And I don't like it if I don't have any opportunities to become the best. But more importantly, I'm a big fan of the sustainable development goals. And so during lockdown, human well-being is something that's very close to and very dear to me. And during lockdown, I did many initiatives to try and help people with their well-being globally, particularly across my social media challenges, across my social media channels. So I had this challenge called One a Week, hashtag One a Week. And in there, I was doing meditation challenge. I was learning an instrument. I was reading books and all these things, because progress and growth is one of the key ingredients for us as humans to be happy. And I was really trying to motivate people to join me on that journey. And that was something that was really wonderful for myself, but also for everybody who was following me, for my friends during lockdown. And I'm thankful because I learned to play Let It Be on the guitar.
Can you sing?
Oh, no, but I will take a singing teacher soon, because that's one of my childhood dreams, to be able to play the guitar, Let It Be, and sing properly. So this is going to be a next challenge coming up.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a couple of extra questions we're asking everyone at the moment. Is there something you're particularly looking forward to doing after lockdown that you've not been able to do during it?
Oh, just traveling and spending time with friends, meeting them. And because at the moment, we've been very isolated as a family, which it's okay. But at some point, it would be so lovely to see all the best friends again, have a party, have a dinner. And that's what I'm looking forward to after lockdown.
You've got young children, right?
Yeah, we have two daughters, 4 and 2 years old. And that's why at this point, I would like to say I have the biggest respect to all of you out there who are particularly struggling with young kids during lockdown. Maybe even the moms who are in sole care at home in a small apartment with two kids. I mean, oh my goodness. Oh, I have the biggest respect and empathy for your situation, because we've been in a super privileged situation here with a garden, with granny being here. And even then, it's been difficult at times, you know, so really a big respect. And I hope that all of you are now making it through this and able to start going outside, and that school will start for all the young kids as well, ASAP.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And the other question is there a book you've read in the last 12 months or so that you think all of us should read?
Absolutely. It's called A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. Eckhart Tolle is one of the world's leading philosophers at the moment. And A New Earth actually is not about Earth, it's about us personally. And it teaches us to be more aware. And awareness is also a very important ingredient to becoming more happy, and feeling more fulfilled. Awareness and presence. And it's something that I had learned already in my sport, because I worked a lot on meditation. But you can never, you never finish learning. So being more aware, more present. Eckhart Tolle, A New Earth, a spectacular book. But very, very difficult to understand and to make progress. But it's a good challenge.
Great. Thanks very much. Nico Rosberg, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks a lot. It's an honor to be on the WEF podcast as a young global leader of the community.
Thanks so much.